Aislinn Antrim with Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to a special limited series from the Pharmacy Focus podcast, delving into the new frontier of anti-obesity medications and treatments. With the emergence of semaglutide and other highly effective anti-obesity drugs, interest from researchers, clinicians, and patients has exploded. Celebrities have openly discussed using these medications for cosmetic purposes, and although that's not their indication, it has led to many questions from patients. Even organizations like the American Academy of Pediatrics have released guidelines suggesting that these medications may be efficacious for children with obesity. On the other hand, some experts have raised concerns about the impacts of such medications on body image and disordered eating trends, particularly among adolescents. In this three-episode limited series, we'll speak with several experts to try and answer some of these questions. In this first episode, I spoke with physician Donna Ryan, professor emeritus at Pennington Biomedical Research Center in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. She has served as panel co-chair to revise the NIH-supported evidence-based guidelines on the evaluation and management of overweight and obesity in adults, is past president of the Obesity Society, and is a past editor-in-chief of the journal Obesity. With all of her expertise, Ryan said she sees a lot of promise in these new drugs, although she cautioned that clinicians must balance the risks of obesity with patients' desire to feel seen and accepted as they are. So there seems to have been a real explosion over the last year or two of interest in these new, really effective anti-obesity drugs from researchers, clinicians, and the wider public. And of course, this interest has been around probably as long as there have been drugs for these sort of issues. But is this level of interest new or different in your opinion?
It is brand new. And I think, Aislinn, what's different about it is that it's so much driven by social media. You know, usually when we get a new drug, the companies have to work hard to get the word out about the drug. They have to put ads in the magazines doctors and other prescribers read. They have to go around and visit the doctor's office and brief them on the new drug. It's hard work getting a drug launched into the marketplace. But this time, there was the most uptake of the new medicine called Wegovy. It's semaglutide, 2.4 milligrams. It was an incredible rapid uptake, and it was driven by social media. So the pharmaceutical company didn't have anything to do with it. The patients had something to do with it and really sort of drove the interest. But the other thing that's going on that I think is so interesting is not just the social media stuff about it, it's the press. And so, of course, the social media interest drove press interest. And our press interest was much more sympathetic to the whole problem of obesity and ill health than it has been in the past. You know, I think in the past, many people just considered obesity a problem of lack of willpower, and that you could just eat healthy and be active and eventually you're going to, you know, solve the problem. Well, no, that is not true. And so I think the press approach this time was so different. It was much more sympathetic to the patient, and that the patient really was unable through willpower alone to change their body weight. And that is the truth. There's a lot of physiology and biology behind that. So those two things are so different this time. And I think what that did is it really has resulted in this uptake of these medications by not just patients wanting them, but by doctors wanting to prescribe them for their patients who need to lose weight for health reasons. So it's not just a phenomenon of people wanting to take these drugs for cosmetic reasons. It's also a phenomenon of doctors seeing the value of these drugs in helping to manage all of the patients who are in their practice who have diabetes, who have prediabetes, who have metabolic syndrome, who could really get a lot of health benefits with the 10, 15, 20% weight loss that these drugs bring.
Very interesting.
It is, isn't it? Do you agree?
I do. I think that's really accurate. I mean, I think my colleague, Ashley, is also looking at the celebrity aspect, which goes into the social media, which is so interesting.
Yeah. I think they kicked it off. But look, what's really happening now is different. The doctors are seeing, you know, it really is time we start taking this obesity seriously, because let me tell you, it's driving the ill health of all the patients that are on my appointment books. Mm-hmm. And that is what they're intended for. And that is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, what are the key kind of scientific developments that have made these so effective?
Yeah, you know, I think we really have to take our hats off to our basic scientists, the neurobiologists who really brought us to a level of understanding of appetite and body weight regulation. You know, that is indeed a science, and the control of appetite is in the brain, and it's, you know, it is not something that we can control ourselves. It's just like, we can't control our ovulation. We can't control our metabolic rate. Well, the food intake is something that is very difficult for us to control cognitively, because it's got such a strong biology around it. So understanding the biology really led to the development of these medications that are based on hormones in what we call the gut-brain axis. So, you know, after we eat, our gut starts sending signals to the brain about the status of our food intake. And when food reaches the stomach, the stretch receptors in the vagus nerve tell the brain food's on the way. Then when food enters the small intestine, we start to see the release of these gut hormones, GLP-1, GIP, oxyntomodulin, PYY. Yeah, some great hormones go into the brain. They're released into the bloodstream. The brain receives the signals, knows that food's on the way, and it initiates this feeling of satiety. Then when those nutrients are absorbed, our pancreas sends signals. It sends it sends amylin and insulin. And that signal also signals that food is on the way and helps promote that feeling of satiety. So understanding that was the first step. And then that really spurred interest in those hormones. And the first one to really be exploited for medical reasons was GLP-1. And the way it got exploited was, it was observed that when food hits the small intestine, the signal goes for satiety. It also is picked up by the pancreas. And if the blood sugar is high, it makes the pancreas release insulin. So it was first exploited for diabetes treatment. And in that, it caused the release of insulin only when the blood sugar was high. That is a great quality, because, you know, just giving insulin itself, or giving what we call the insulin secretagogues, the sulfonylureas, those things cause the release of insulin no matter what your blood sugar is. And so it can be associated with hypoglycemia. So this GLP-1 was first developed as a medication for diabetes. And the first one was released in the market about 17 years ago. So we have a lot of experience with it. And we observed weight loss with that. That piqued our interest. And so there was further development around this GLP-1 physiology, and it's led to the very latest one being the most powerful agent for weight loss yet. And that is semaglutide. It's approved now. It has an indication for diabetes under one name and for obesity under another name, but it's exactly the same molecule. Now, I guess our Food and Drug Administration doesn't want us to get confused about whether we're treating obesity or diabetes, even when patients have both together. So they've given us the same molecule with two different names. Yeah, so that's how it happened. It's really understanding. And now the amazing thing, Ainsland, is it's continuing. So we're seeing not just the not just these GLP-1 being exploited. Oh no, now we've got GIP with GLP-1. We're going to have a triple one, glucagon, GLP-1, and GIP. That's going into clinical trials very soon. And then they're going to exploit amylin, a long-acting amylin analog. So for this gut-brain axis, it is really, it's being exploited, and that would be a good thing.
That's really incredible.
Yeah.
We spoke before about which patients should actually be receiving these medications. So can you review who they're really indicated for?
Yeah, so the indication is for a BMI of 30 or higher. That's usually about 50 pounds overweight, roughly. Or a BMI of 27 with a comorbid condition. You know, what we're trying to do there is identify individuals who are at high health risk. There are some individuals who have a BMI of 30 who don't really have excess abnormal body fat and are at high health risk, or even a BMI of 27 who don't. But those are the indications by the FDA. It's up to the clinicians to make a decision, a clinical diagnosis of obesity. And what we teach them is that we want to know, does this person have excess abnormal body fat? What is the waist circumference? Is the fat located within the abdomen? Could the fat be located around organs? Is there evidence that this patient has metabolic dysfunction? Because those are the patients who really need to lose weight for health reasons. You know, there's a difference in wanting to lose weight for cosmetic reasons, but it's a more powerful reason to lose weight for health reasons. And you know, whenever we treat patients, it's always a balance of risk and benefit. There is no medication that is risk-free, and these medications are the same. And so if you aren't at health risk, we don't want to give you a treatment that has any risk. So that's why our cosmetic treatments always have to be ultra safe, ultra safe. But when we're treating a health condition, the sicker you are, the more risk we'll accept with that medication, because otherwise you're in trouble.
That makes sense. Just looking at kind of cancer drugs and how hard those are.
Exactly. That is what we teach in medicine. And that is the principle we all adhere to, or we should adhere to.
Very interesting. You also made really good points in our last conversation that honestly, I've never heard a clinician really say out loud before about a societal need to also accept different bodies. So can you give more thoughts on this issue?
Yes, absolutely. You know, body size does not equate to body health. No, it does not. We need to be far more accepting of variation in body size. You know, we are predisposed by our genes to have a certain body habitus. Now, some of us are more susceptible to getting in trouble with where we're storing that excess body weight. And if we store it in abnormal body fat locations, that body fat can produce ill health. But look, there's nothing wrong with being a large body size. What really counts is what that body fat looks like. You know, we need body fat. It's important to our health. You have to have a certain amount of body fat to be fertile and to maintain fertility. You need, it protects us, body fat protects us. And we actually think fat that's located under the skin subcutaneously in the hips and thighs is healthy. There's nothing wrong with that. A healthy fat in the hips and thighs is good for you. But when we exceed our ability to store fat in those healthy subcutaneous body stores, we'll start storing it in the liver, or we'll start storing it around the kidneys, or in muscle, or around blood vessels, and the epicardial adipose tissue right on the surface of the heart. That can be bad. So it's really that that we're looking for. Sometimes we can get in trouble with, say, too much fat around the neck and obstructing sleep apnea, or too much fat within the abdomen, and that promotes increased intra-abdominal pressure and GERD, or urinary incontinence. But most of the time, it's the bad products of this abnormal body fat. You know, this ectopic, what we call ectopic body fat, that's located around in the viscera around organs. That ectopic body fat is producing a lot of abnormal cytokines. It's producing angiotensinogen, which promotes blood pressure. It's producing a lot of interleukins and pro-inflammatory factors. It's producing PI1, pro-thrombotic factors. And so these things are really, they're driving type 2 diabetes. They're driving insulin resistance. They're driving cardiovascular diseases. They're driving cancer. So that's what we really want to do. We want to treat that. And the very best news I can give you is this. You do not need to be a so-called normal body weight to be healthy. We can get a lot of health benefits by removing this excess abnormal body fat. You don't have to be any ideal body size at all. So what we know is that when we start to lose weight, we lose the bad stuff first. We lose the bad body fat first. And so 10%, 15% weight loss produces a lot of reduction in visceral adipose tissue, in the adipose tissue that's around the epicardium, that epicardial adipose tissue. Fat in the liver starts to clear. So it's not really about reducing your body size so much. It's really that you get these incredible health benefits. So the real, it's a very curious power of modest and moderate weight loss. You get a lot of health benefits. And that's what we want to achieve. You know, Ainsley, we've never been able to do that before because it's so darn hard to get weight loss with just lifestyle. But with these medications, we can. And that's why doctors are interested. They're interested in, okay, I've got a patient newly diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. If I can get that patient to lose 15%, I'll have them not just controlled. They have a really good chance of having normal blood sugar, of having normal blood lipids, maybe not requiring any of these diabetes medicines, maybe just, we'll just treat the obesity. And that is what is so wonderful about it. Now look, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with wanting to fit into your skinny jeans. Everybody has a pair of jeans in the closet that they want to be able to fit into. I have my own. But there's nothing wrong with that, because weight loss, it does make you feel better. But you don't have to get to a BMI of 25, even a BMI of 30. You feel a lot better with just that 15% weight loss. That should be our goal.
Definitely. I think we always societally hear about, like, I need to lose 100 pounds. And it's so interesting to know that even a little bit goes a long way.
And yes, and that is one thing that's very misunderstood about these drugs. They do not guarantee you 100 pounds weight loss. No, absolutely not. There's a lot of variation in how much weight people are going to lose. We cannot really predict. We cannot predict how much weight you're going to lose. We know it's likely to be somewhere between 5 and 20%. So about 85% of people will lose at least 5%. But only about a third will lose 20% or more. Everybody else is in the mid-range. You'll notice that I'm saying percent. I'm not saying pounds. That is how the doctor's thinking. The patients are thinking in pounds, but the doctors like to think in percent. And the reason for that is it's a very curious thing, and patients need to know this. You know, we know that the weight loss, the same percentage weight loss gives the same improvement, whether your BMI is 30 or your BMI is 40. You lose more pounds at a BMI of 40, but the same percentage weight loss produces the same improvements in lipids and glycemia and all the health factors. So when we're trying to set a goal, what the doctors are thinking is, I have a patient with obstructive sleep apnea. I need more than 10% weight loss. I have a patient who's got GERD, it's a man, I need more than 10% weight loss. We know that we can, that those sorts of conditions require more weight loss. Established diabetes, we want to aim for 15% weight loss. So when we're setting our goal, we're the doctor's thinking that. Now the patient may be thinking, oh yeah, I'd like to lose 100 pounds this time. Well, no, we're going to set an achievable goal. And you know, that's why the goal that I'm pushing for is I'm always multiplying in my head. You know, if you weigh 200 pounds, I want my dream weight for you is 170. It is not a BMI of 25 or 24, whatever you want it to be. No, I want you down about 30 pounds. If you have one of these more serious conditions, I'll be satisfied with 20 pounds because I know I can get a lot of health benefits at that 10% weight loss. I'll be satisfied there, but I'm really aiming for a little bit more. So when I talk to the patients, I'm talking about pounds, but I'm thinking about percentage.
Have you listened to other podcasts from Pharmacy Focus? We have podcasts for all interests, from students to psychedelics. In the latest episode of Pharmacy Focus, we spoke with an expert about the recent FDA approval of lecanemab and what it means for those who have Alzheimer's disease. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, how do you see this issue of kind of body acceptance colliding with these new anti-obesity medications?
Yeah, you know, I think that first of all, we will never be able to get people to some sort of ideal that they want safely. Safely. You know, we need to make sure our patients have some healthy body fat stores. That's good for you. So we're in this transitional period where it hasn't been possible to produce any degree of weight loss safely and successfully. Now we're able for most patients to achieve this 15% weight loss, more than 50%. We can get into that 15% weight loss category. But it'll be years before we can actually do a lot better than that. So we'll never be able to achieve everyone's dream, at least in the next 20 years. So I think it is important. I mean, when we teach doctors about obesity, we teach them about, look, you need to go where your patients are, not where you are. It's the patients who are driving the car here, not you. The patients are the ones who have to take the medicine, who have to change their physical activity and eating patterns, not you. Doesn't matter what you want. You must go to where the patients are, and you have to understand your patients, and you must share the decision with the patient. You may have a lot of expertise, but your patient is the one that counts. Your goal is to keep that patient safe, number one. So what I'm hoping is that what will happen with this body acceptance movement is that it really will push physicians into being more accepting of body size and not looking at patients and deciding if they need to lose weight. Let's look at their health indices, huh? And decide if they need to lose weight. So I think that's where we're going. Right now, we need to not ignore body size. That's just a screener. The BMI is just a screener. But it's from there we go to body health. So what I'm hoping is that physicians will love their patients, will think they're beautiful no matter what their body size, but they're going to be more concerned about body health and more willing to talk about body health that could be improved with changes in eating patterns, and the way to get there is with medications. So I think right now, Aislinn, it's really kind of the doctors and the patients are butting heads. What they really need to do is join hands and walk off into the sunset together.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I wanted to clarify, this isn't on my list, but I know there's always been an issue with people if they're able to lose weight with lifestyle. It's not sustainable. It's very rarely sustained. Is that different with these medications? Do they help that as well?
Oh my gosh, yeah. The way these medications work is through appetite. And so what we know is that as long as you take the medication, you will have that effect. A lot of times what people will report when they've been on the newer medications about a year and their weight stabilizes at a lower weight, they're at this plateau, they'll report that their hunger comes back. Well, what's happening there is their hunger is being matched to their new body weight. And so you're not meant to have no hunger in this lifetime. You're meant to feel hungry, you're meant to feel full. These signals are what drives our eating patterns. As long as you stay on the medications, we know that your odds of staying at that reduced weight are the best. When we do the studies and we remove the medications, no matter how much weight you've lost, we see the pattern of weight regain. So at the end of a year, people have regained about two-thirds of the weight they lost. Now, this is what's happening on average. I know from the studies I did with lifestyle that there's a subgroup of patients who are able to maintain weight loss. We don't know that this is true for medications. So for now, our best advice is to stay on the medication. But when patients lose weight, they feel wonderful. And they say to me, "I've got this covered. I know what to do now. I'm never going back to where I was. I don't need these medications anymore." And they want to stop the medication. And I could say, "Well, let me show you this study. I want you to see. We took the medications away. The patients didn't know it. We changed them to placebo. Half of the group was continuing the medication. The other half we changed to placebo, but they didn't know it. And look, the placebo group regained. The patients who were continuing the medication kept it off. Do you want to regain? Oh yeah, but I'm different." Patients say, "Oh yeah, I got it covered. I know what to do." When you stop the medication, you don't get these immediate, very huge appetite effects, but you do eat a little more at every meal. It's like drip, 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 slow, steady weight regain. So if they stop, I say, "Okay, you're going to come back. When you regain, we're going to start you. You're not regaining two-thirds of the weight you lost. We're not giving up that hard-won ground. We're going to start you back sooner." So that is our current approach. We need a lot of research in this area, Aislinn. There may be a different approach we could use for weight loss maintenance than we're using for weight loss. Maybe a different medication, something that'd be easier to take. That is in the research department.
Wonderful. In addition to clinical adverse reactions that there's research on, there might be potential risks around disordered eating or too much weight loss, especially for those who might want to use it cosmetically, even though, as we said, that's not what it's indicated for. Have you seen any research on this issue, or do you have any thoughts?
We do have good research on how these drugs work and what is their effect on appetite. So we give the drugs and put people in these experimental conditions where they report their hunger, they report their satiety, they report their desire to eat, they report their craving. And so actually there is a reduction in craving with semaglutide. It's been very well studied with this. We think that medications that affect appetite may actually improve people who have binge eating disorder. They don't have an indication for that, but that is being studied, and it is possible to get an indication for binge eating disorder, and I hope that the companies will pursue that. But the worrisome thing about these drugs is that some people can use them to lose too much weight. Yes. What we do as physicians, when patients get down to when their body weight, we're following them. And there are a significant number, maybe 10% of patients, who will get down to a BMI of 25 or less. And we start watching them like hawks. We do not want the BMI less than 23. We do not. And in fact, we're more comfortable with it a little higher. So there is a danger that people could use these medications to support their anorexia nervosa or their disordered body image to reach a body weight and a body size that is too thin, that is very unhealthy. The only good thing I can say about obesity is that people with obesity have lesser osteoporosis. So we worry about people losing too much weight and increasing too much lean mass loss and increasing risk of fractures. This is for older individuals. So we're very careful in individuals who are over age 65. We are not letting them lose as much weight. We don't want them to. It's not healthy. And we think it increases that risk of frailty fractures.
Very good to know. How can clinicians balance these risks of obesity with patients' desires to feel respected and accepted as they are?
Absolutely. We know that when patients lose weight, they feel better about themselves. In fact, it's one of the most wonderful things about my career. Yeah, my career has been a struggle to get enough patients to achieve enough weight loss to get the health benefits. Believe me, quality of life is a health benefit. So yeah, we're going in the right direction with this. There are, we're only beginning. We only now have the ability to deliver enough weight loss to make a difference to people's health. And it's going to continue. So I think we're going to have more and more doctors trained in this. I think it means better care for all patients. What we teach in every session about obesity is that, look, it is shared decision making. This is a decision that your patient must make. You're the coach. You are not the boss. You're just the coach. The patient is the boss.
Absolutely. Is there anything you want to add? We've got about 3 minutes. So anything that I didn't cover or ask about?
Yeah, I think the most important thing for everybody, doctors, patients, employers, health insurers to know is that obesity is a chronic disease. That, yes, we can achieve weight loss with these newer medications, but if we stop them, we're really at risk for weight regain. This is just like hypertension. It's just like all our other chronic diseases. It requires long-term care. So this is not a one and done. We don't do everything at once. It's a chronic disease.
Definitely. Thank you so much. This was so wonderful. I'm so excited. I'm going to be interviewing a couple of other people and kind of putting you all together for a bunch of different perspectives and experiences. Yeah, so I'm really excited. Thank you so much.
Aislinn, it's so much fun talking to you.
Thank you for listening. Tune in September 13th for the second installment in this limited series.